Well, I was sitting in John Sabini's class, and I was reading about Emile Durkheim. And Emile Durkheim had found that people that were Catholics were less likely to commit suicide than were Protestants. Mm. And I read that, and I'm thinking, this has got to be wrong. I mean, aren't all Sikhs depressed, given how many rules they have? Right. I was also taking this class by Martin Seligman. Mm. So we decided to run this study. And you know, and he said if I was going to run this study, then I had to do it the right way. And the right way meant that it wasn't going to be done with undergrads. It was going to be done with people that actually went to
real,
church.
Real religious people.
Yeah, people yeah. who really were observant. Uh-huh. And then for the next, was it 2 years? Good chunk of my life, at least from my undergraduate life, I spent every weekend, you know, either in a mosque, in a synagogue, one kind of church or another, 9 different religions, and went to services and got people to fill out surveys in which we measured what were their reactions to negative events in their life, like you lose a job, what's going to happen to you? Someone dies in your family. You know, so that's the way you measure pessimism or optimism. It wasn't about religion. It was about their reactions to bad events in their life. And then we looked at their depression using the standard Beck depression inventory. And we also had them complete a religiousness measure, which was things like the extent to which your religion had control over you, meaning controlled what you ate, what you wore, whom you married. Mm-hmm. You know, to what extent did your religion have a say in that? And how often were you attending services or doing religiously oriented activities? And then also how much hope that your religion gave you, meaning
right.
you believed your suffering would be rewarded. And what we found, which did surprise me, was that the members of the more fundamentalist faiths were actually more optimistic. They had an easier time dealing with negative things in their lives. They also were less likely to be depressed. And the members of more liberal faiths were more pessimistic, more likely to be depressed. Atheists turned out to be even more at risk for pessimism and depression.
So how did you begin to make sense of that? So it was surprising, and then how did you work with that? Where did it take you in your thinking?
Well, I remember the last line of that article. I remember I wrote that with Marty in his office. And it was kind of an intriguing line. And at the time, I wasn't quite sure I completely agreed with Marty's thoughts. And he said, you know, it went something like this: this means that the question of authoritarianism needs to be reopened. Hmm. And I remember, you know, him saying that, and it seemed like a really provocative ending for the piece, so I agreed with that, but I wasn't sure I agreed with it in terms of whether it really is authoritarianism,
right.
should really be reopened.
Yeah.
I came back to that almost subconsciously through the studies I ran with Asian and Anglo-American children a few years ago. I didn't think I was doing another religion study. From my perspective, I wasn't studying religion anymore.
Right.
But when I was a PhD student, I started to question whether choice meant different things to people from different parts of the world, and questioned the idea that in order for something to have value to you, you have to be the one to choose it.
Right.
And I think that, you know, and I showed that Asian children would in fact at times value something that was chosen by trusted others more than if it was chosen by them.
Didn't you also, I think, one of the things that if their mothers, that they were motivated when their mothers had assigned a particular task in a way that Anglo-American
yes.
children weren't, for example.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So, like, for example, Asian children, I mean, even as young as 7-year-old kids, if you, an Anglo-American child was really motivated if they got to choose the task they were doing, they even performed better. And if mom had chosen it, there was a drop in terms of their performance.
Right.
Whereas for Asian kids, they actually performed better if mom chose it than if they chose it for themselves.
Yeah.
And I think it was only then that I began to realize that there was a link to this, the study I did on religion. Until then, I had thought of it as an independent, separate study. That in a sense, they were both getting at the same idea, which is that people do appreciate having structure, you know, provided you buy into those values and those belief systems, whether it be religion, whether it be what your mom thinks is true, whether it be cultural prescriptions, provided you buy into it, it's actually really motivating. I mean, it really helps your life.
When other people commented on your on this religion study, they would talk about these people as though they had no control over their lives. But I mean, and even when you look at these students who you studied, right? It's not that there's no control or no choice, but it's a different kind of control. I mean, it's, you know, to the extent that the religion is controlling or that family tradition is controlling, people are also choosing to, they're making choices on a different basis, right? I mean, you can say this better than I can, but is that...
I think what we're confusing here is what does it mean to have control?
Mm-hmm.
Because, look, if I'm a Sikh or a Christian or a Jew or a Muslim, I have control because now that I know what is the, quote, right and wrong thing to do, you know, there are rituals, there are rules, and they tell me what is a good person, and I'll put that in quotes, supposed to do. Mm-hmm. What would a good person do in that situation? I have now the power to go out and do it. There's a sense of certainty. If anything, I can feel quite empowered by that.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, if I'm atheist or I simply don't know what I should do, I mean, it doesn't even have to be an atheist, well, that can be quite paralyzing. I mean, you're sitting there, oh, should I go to the left? Should I go to the right? What's the right thing to do here? What's the wrong thing to do here? There's a certain amount, that's actually quite, I would say, unempowering.
Mm-hmm.
I think it depends on how you define control. If you define control as I will entirely write all the rules by which I will live my life, the script, you know, sort of like the Frank Sinatra song, you know, I did it my way. Yes, I made some mistakes, right. But I did it my way.
Yeah.
Right? So I will entirely write my script. That could be one way of thinking about having control. Another way to think about having control is to say, look, I was given this script. And I executed it with great aplomb.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing to say that that means you don't have control.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a different kind of control.